Welcome back to the lecture. This is now a lecture on the topic of common carriers, liability, and presumption of negligence. Under this article, we have Article 1733. We have discussed that in the previous lecture, and you have to go back to our discussion under nature and basis of liability. Remember, the nature and basis of liability for vigilance over goods are in Article 1734, 1735, 1745, numbers 5, 6, and 7, while the extraordinary diligence for the safety of passengers required of common carriers, it's set forth in Articles 1755 and 1756. So under 1734, this is about vigilance over the goods. This is about extraordinary diligence to be observed by common carriers in the vigilance over the goods. 1734 again provides that common carriers are responsible for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods unless the same is due to any of the following causes only. So it's restrictive, as we have discussed in the previous lecture. The list is restrictive. Number one, flood, storm, earthquake, lightning, or other natural disaster or calamity. And remember, calamity does not include fire used or initiated by one of the parties. Number two, act of the public enemy in war, whether international or civil. Number three, act or omission of the shipper or owner of the goods. Number four, the character of the goods or defect, or defects in the packaging or in the containers. And number five, order or act of competent public authority. Under Article 1735, in all cases other than those mentioned in numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of 1734, if the goods are lost, destroyed, or deteriorated, common carriers are presumed to have been at fault or to have acted negligently, unless they prove that they observe extraordinary diligence as required in Article 1733. And Article 73, once again, we repeat, Article 73 provides that common carriers, from the nature of their business and for reasons of public policy, are bound to observe extraordinary diligence in the vigilance over the goods and for the safety of the passengers transported by them according to the circumstances of each case. So what are these responsibilities of common carriers? In general, common carriers are responsible for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods carried by them. This responsibility arises from contract, as the relation between a carrier and its patrons is of contractual nature. A failure on the carrier to use extraordinary care in carrying goods or passengers safely is a breach of contract and constitutes culpa contractual and not culpa aquiliana. And while the liability of a carrier as an insurer is not recognized in this jurisdiction, a carrier is liable for damages suffered by goods carried if such damages arise from its negligence. The carrier is also liable even in those cases where the cause of the loss or damage is unknown. The law also requires a common carrier to exercise extraordinary diligence, which means that they must render service with the greatest skill and utmost foresight. The extraordinary diligence required of common carriers in the handling of the goods of the shipper and the consignee lasts from the time the cargoes are loaded in the vessels until they are discharged and delivered to the consignees. To comply with this obligation, a common carrier should be afforded the right of having a wide discretion in the selection and supervision of persons who will handle the goods. The common carrier can terminate, of course, the services of its drivers, pilots, and employees for serious misconduct and drunkenness because of its duty of extraordinary diligence. whenever a passenger dies or is injured, the presumption is that the common carrier is at fault, notwithstanding the fact that it has exercised due diligence of a good father of a family in the selection and supervision of the employees. Thus, extraordinary measures and diligence should be exercised by it for the safety of its passengers and their belongings. A common carrier can terminate an employee whose continued service is inimical to its interests and the safety of the passengers. A common carrier has duty to keep and care for the goods carried by the passengers. It is the duty of the common carrier to properly and carefully handle, carry, keep, and care for the goods carried, and to exercise due care to ascertain and consider the nature of the goods offered for shipment, and to use such methods for their care during the voyage as their nature requires. The carrier is liable for injury to or loss of cargo resulting from the failure to properly care for and handle the cargo en route, and it is required to provide adequate ventilation for the safe carriage of the cargo and provide reasonable and ordinary inspection and care in and about the transportation of cargo. A vessel should not accept cargo unless it can be given the type of storage that its character requires. For placing of conditions in a bill of lading does not relieve the vessels of obligation to take appropriate care of the cargo. There's a duty of carrier to deliver cargo in good condition as when loaded. There is no absolute obligation for a common carrier to accept cargo. It should not be accepted unless it can be given the type of storage that its character requires. And where a vessel accepts a cargo for shipment for valuable consideration, it takes the risk of delivering it in good condition as when it was loaded. And if the fact of improper packing is known to the carrier or his servants, or apparent upon ordinary observation, but still it accepts the goods notwithstanding such condition, it is not relieved of liability for loss or injury resulting therefrom. In the exercise of extraordinary diligence required by law, the common carrier must give due regard to all circumstances and take all steps necessary to ensure the safety of the passengers and the goods given the circumstances. How about the presumption of negligence? Under Article 1735, if the goods are proven to have been lost, destroyed, or deteriorated, common carriers are presumed to have been at fault or to have acted negligently, unless they prove that they have observed the extraordinary diligence required by law. The plaintiff needs only to prove that the goods he transported have been lost, destroyed, or deteriorated. The common carrier must then prove that he has exercised extraordinary diligence required by law, or that the loss, destruction, or deterioration was due to accident or some other circumstances inconsistent with its liability. A mere proof of delivery of goods in order to a carrier and of their arrival at the place of destination in a bad order makes out a prima facie case against the common carrier. But what are the defenses available to the common carrier? If there's a presumption of negligence, what defenses are available to the common carrier, or what defenses should the common carrier invoke in case such presumption exists? The common carrier may invoke the following defenses. Number one, you can invoke Article 1734. Number two, Article 1735, that regarding the exercise of extraordinary diligence required by law. And number three, It's about natural disasters. The common carrier is exempt from liability if he proves that the loss or destruction of the merchandise was due to accident and force majeure and not to fraud, fault, or negligence on the part of the employees and owners of the common carrier. A common carrier cannot interpose the defense that it exercised due diligence in the selection and supervision of employees. The liability of the common carrier arises from breach of the contract of carriage and not from culpa aquiliana. It is, however, the duty of the common carrier to teach their drivers not to overload vehicles, not to exceed safe and legal speed limits, and other safety precautions. It should be remembered, however, that a carrier is not an insurer against all risks, so the common carriers are not required to exercise all the care, skill, and diligence of which the human mind can conceive, nor such as will free the transportation of passengers from all possible perils. A common carrier is not an insurer of the safety of their passengers and is not absolutely and all at all events to carry them safely and without injury. And there's a case of Inchausti Steamship Company versus Dexter, 41 Philippines 289. In this case of Inchausti Steamship Company versus Dexter, it was ruled, the issue there is whether Inchausti is liable for the loss, and of course the court ruled that yes. Basis is section 646, according to the court of the administrative code, provides that when government property is transmitted from one source to another by a carrier, it shall be upon proper bill of lading or receipt from such carrier, and it shall be the duty of the consignee or his representatives to make all notation of any evidence of loss, shortage, or damage on the bill of lading or receipt before accomplishing it. It is admitted by petitioner in this case that the consignee at the time the goods were delivered noted and losses in the respective bill of ladings. Such notation made in obedience to the code is competent evidence to show that the shortage did exist. Inasmuch as the fact of the loss was proven, it results in the presumption that the petitioner was to blame for the loss, and it was incumbent upon the petitioner to rebut that presumption by proving that the loss was not due, to any fault or negligence of the petitioner. The mere proof of delivery of goods in good order to a carrier and of their arrival at the place of destination in bad order makes out a prima facie case against the carrier, so that if no explanation is given as to how the injury occurred, the carrier must be held responsible. It is incumbent upon the carrier to prove that the loss was due to accident or some other circumstance inconsistent with its liability. Indeed, if the government had instituted an action in court against petitioner in this case to recover the value of the oil lost, it would be based on the facts be entitled to judgment. In the absence of proof showing that the carrier was not at fault for the loss, the insular auditor was entitled to withhold the amount admittedly due to petitioner for the freight charges, which is a sum sufficient to cover the value of the oil lost in transit. And that's the case of Inchausti Steamship Company versus Dexter. There's another case of Mirasol versus Dollar, 53 Philippines 124, and the question is whether or not Dollar or Dulyar may be held liable. And the court said yes, Dollar or Dulyar may be held liable because according to the court, there was no claim or pretense that Mirasol signed the bill of lading or that he knew of its contents. in that situation, he was not legally bound by the clause limiting dollars liability. Where it appears, according to the court, where it appears that a bill of lading was issued to a shipper containing a clause limiting the carrier's liability, printed in fine letters on the back of the bill of lading, which the shipper did not sign and of which he was not advised, the shipper is not bound by the clause limiting liability, and the stipulation is void or against public policy. The court continued that shippers who are forced to ship goods in an ocean liner have legal rights when the goods are delivered on board in good order and condition, and the carrier delivers them to the shipper in bad order and condition. In an action for damages, the burden of proof shifted and it devolves upon the carrier to both allege and prove that the goods were damaged by reason of some act which legally exempts it from liability. Having received the boxes in good condition, its legal duty was to deliver them in the same condition it was received. Dollar, in this case, having admitted that the goods were damaged while in transit and in its possession, the burden of proof then shifted and it devolved upon him to allege and prove that the damage was caused by reason of some fact which exempted it from liability. As to when and how the goods were damaged in transit is a matter of peculiarly within the knowledge of the carrier and its employees. To require Mirasol to prove such would force him to rely upon the employees of Dollar Ship, which in legal effect would be to say that he could not recover damages at all. Since Dollar was not even able to prove that the goods were wet with seawater due to a fortuitous event, then it must be presumed that the carrier was liable. How about exemption from liability? As we've said, Article 1734 provides for some exemptions from liability. The proof of the delivery of the goods in good order to a carrier and of their arrival at the place of destination, short or in bad order, makes a prima facie case. It is incumbent then on the carrier, in order to exonerate itself, to prove that the loss or injury was due to some circumstances inconsistent with its liability. Under 1734, letter H, natural disaster. So, common carriers are responsible for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods unless the same is due to any of the following causes only. So, 1734 number 1, flood, storm, earthquake, lightning, or other natural disaster or calamity. So, it's natural disaster. Under Article 1739, in order of that a common carrier may be exempted from responsibility, the natural disaster must have been the proximate and only cause of the loss. However, the common carrier must exercise due diligence to prevent or minimize loss before, during, and after the occurrence of flood, storm, or other natural disaster so that the common carrier may be exempted from liability or the loss, destruction, for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods. The same duty is incumbent upon the common carrier in case of an act of the public enemy referred to in Article 1734, number 2. Under Article 1740, if the common carrier negligently incurs in delay in transporting the goods, a natural disaster shall not free such carrier from responsibility. So remember, if the common carrier incurs in delay negligently in transporting the goods, then he cannot anymore invoke the defense of natural disaster, and he will not be free from responsibility because of its negligent delay in transporting the goods. Under Article 361, merchandise shall be transported at the risk and venture of the shipper, if the contrary has not been expressly stipulated. And as a consequence, all the losses and deteriorations which the goods may suffer during the transportation by reason of fortuitous event, force majeure, or other inherent nature and defect of the goods, shall be for the account and risk of the shipper. Proof of this incident is incumbent upon the carrier, and this is according to the Code of Commerce, and that would be in Article 361 of the Code of Commerce. So as we have said, transportation of the merchandise at the risk and venture of the shipper means that the shipper will suffer losses and deterioration arising from fortuitous event, force majeure or inherent nature, and defects of the goods. It does not mean that the carrier is free from liability for losses and deterioration arising from his negligence or fault, which is presumed and thus construed. Paragraphs 1 of Article 361 is not inconsistent. It's not inconsistent with Article 1735 of the New Civil Code. So what are the requisites for defense of natural disaster? Under 1739, the natural disaster must have been the proximate and only cause of the loss. Number two, the common carrier must exercise due diligence to prevent or minimize the loss before, during, and after the occurrence of flood, storm, or other natural disaster. If the common carrier does not exercise due diligence in minimizing the loss, he may yet be held liable notwithstanding the fact that the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods arose out of a natural disaster. And number three, the requisite is that one listed in Articles 1740, that the common carrier must not be in delay. If the common carrier incurs in delay, a natural disaster shall not free it from responsibility. Under Article 1165 or 1165, paragraph 3 of the Civil Code, if the obligor incurs delay, he shall be responsible for any fortuitous event until he has effected delivery. However, if between the delay or refusal of the common carrier to transport the goods and the loss of the goods due to an act of God, there intervened the shipper's negligence, thus causing a break in the chain of causation between the act of God, which caused their loss, and the common carrier's fault, the act of God is the proximate cause of the loss, and the carrier's delay or refusal to transport the goods is merely the remote cause. In such cases, the shipper is not even entitled to set up the claim of contributory negligence. It is then necessary that it be established that the common carrier was guilty of a willful or negligent act, and that between this willful or negligent act and the act of God, no negligence on the part of the shipper intervened. With respect to accidents caused either by defects in the carrier or through the negligence of the carrier, is not caso fortuito. The passenger or shipper has every right to presume that the carrier is perfectly in good condition and could transport him safely and securely to his destination. In the case of Tan Chung San versus Inchausti and Company, 22 Philippines 152, the issue here is that whether or not the carrier is relieved from liability due to force majeure, and the answer is yes, and number two, whether or not the carrier is liable for the loss of the cargo and for failure to deliver the same at the place of destination, and the answer is no. In the case of Tan Chung San versus In Charles State, the court had occasion to rule that it said that it is a proven fact that the loss or damage to the goods shipped on the said Lorca was due to the force majeure which caused the wreck of the said craft. According to 361 of the Code of Commerce, merchandise shall be transported at the risk and venture of the shipper unless the contrary be expressly stipulated. No such stipulation appears of record. Therefore, all damages and impairments suffered by the goods in transportation by reason of the accident, force majeure, or by virtue of the nature of or defect of the articles are for the account and risk of the shipper. The carrier is exempt from liability if he is able to prove as he did prove that the loss or destruction of the merchandise was due to accident and force majeure and not to fraud, fault, or negligence on the part of the captain or owner of the ship, that the loss was as a result of the stranding of Pilar because of the hurricane that overtook it. The second issue in this case is that whether or not the carrier is liable for the loss of the cargo and for failure to deliver the same at the place of destination, and the answer is no. The record bears in this case, according to the court, that there was no proof that said loss caused by the destruction of Pilar occurred through the carelessness or negligence of the defendant, its agents, or patrons of the Lorca. The defendant, as well as its agents and patron, had a natural interest in preserving the craft, an interest equal to that of the plaintiff. The record discloses that Pilar was manned by an experienced patron and a sufficient number of crewmen, thus the fact that it was fully equipped. The crew took all the precautions that any diligent man should have taken, whose duty it was to save the boat and its cargo, and by the instinct of self-preservation of their lives. Considering, therefore, that according to the court, that the conduct of the men of the defendant Pilar and of its agents during the disaster, the defendant has not incurred any liability whatsoever for the loss of the goods, inasmuch as such loss was the result of a fortuitous event or force majeure, and there was no negligence or lack of care or diligence on the part of the defendant or its agent in this case. The loss of a ship and of its cargo in a wreck due to accident or force majeure must, as a general rule, fall upon the respective owners, except in cases where the wrecking or stranding of the vessel occurred through malice, carelessness, or lack of skill on the part of the captain, or because the vessel put to sea is insufficiently repaired and prepared, pursuant to Article 841 of the Code of Commerce. In another case of Martini Limited versus Macondray Company, 39 Philippines 934, the Supreme Court had occasion to rule that the plaintiff has consented to having the cargo carried on deck, and that the defendant was not negligent and is not liable for the damage to the cargo. So two issues: whether or not the plaintiff consented to having the cargo carried on deck, the court said yes. Whether or not the defendant was negligent and liable for the damage to the cargo, the Supreme Court said no. According to the Supreme Court in this case, Martini, while Martini would have greatly preferred for the cargo to be carried under the hatches, they nevertheless consented for it to go on deck. Cudina, an employee of Martini, if attentive to the interests of his company, must have known from the tenor of the guarantee which he signed that defendant had reserved the right to carry the cargo on deck. The bill of lading plainly showed that the cargo would be so carried. The plaintiff was duly notified as to the manner by which was the cargo was to be shipped. They only protested after the bill had been negotiated, the bank, and even when there was time to stop the shipment. They failed to give the necessary instructions, thereby manifesting quiescence. In every contract of affrightment, losses by dangers of the seas are excepted from the risk which the carrier takes upon himself, whether the exception is expressed in contract or not. The exception is made by law and falls within the general principle that no one is responsible for fortuitous events. But then, this general law is subject to the exception that when the inevitable accident is preceded by fault of the carrier, without which it would not have happened, then he becomes responsible for it. The carrier is responsible for safe and proper storage of the cargo, and there is no doubt that by the general maritime law, he is bound to secure the cargo safely under deck. If he carries the goods on deck without the consent of the shipper and the goods are damaged or lost in consequence of being exposed, the carrier cannot protect himself by showing that they were damaged or lost by the dangers of the sea. When the shipper consents to his goods being carried on deck, he takes the risk upon himself. That's why, according to the court, the plaintiff has consented to having the cargo carried on deck. And if goods shipped are found to have been damaged, the burden of proof is on the carrier to show that the damage was due to fortuitous event. But even if the damage is caused by one of the accepted causes, the carrier is still responsible if the injury might have been avoided by the exercise of reasonable skill and attention on their part. However, in this case, where the shipper consented to the conditions of carriage, the burden of proof is shifted to the shipper. As there is no allegation or proof of negligence on the part of the carrier in protecting the cargo from rain or seawater, and as a complaint clearly indicates that the damage was due to its being kept on deck, and such manner of carriage having been consented to by the plaintiff, the defendant is absolved. It is not permissible for the court, in the absence of any allegation or proof of negligence, to attribute negligence to the ship's employees in the matter of protecting the goods from rains and storms. As we there's another case we have before, it's the Eastern Shipping Lines versus IAC, the one we discussed in the previous lecture, 150/463. The question there was, should petitioner be exempted from liability under 1734 on the ground that the loss of the vessel by far comes under the phrase natural disaster or calamity? And we have answered it before that no, fire may not be considered a natural disaster or calamity. This must be so as it arises almost invariably from the some act of man or by human means. It does not fall within the category of an act of God unless caused by the lightning or by another natural disaster or calamity. It may even be caused by the actual fault or privity of the carrier. Article 1680, which considers fire as an extraordinary fortuitous event, does not apply since it refers only to leases of rural lands where a reduction of rent is allowed when more than one half of the hour fruits have been lost due to such event. As the peril of fire is not contemplated under Article 1734, Article 1735 applies, and the common carrier shall be presumed to have been at fault or to have acted negligently, unless it proves extraordinary diligence. The burden is on the common carrier. The lower court and the Court of Appeals found that there was lack of diligence on the part of the common carrier amounting to actual fault. Even if the fire were to be considered a natural disaster under Article 1734, it is required still under Article 1739 that the disaster must have been the proximate and only cause of the loss, and that the common carrier exercised in due diligence to prevent or minimize the loss before, during, or after the occurrence of the disaster. Nor may petitioners seek refuge under the carriage of goods by sea act, since fire is only an exempting circumstance, if not caused by actual fault or privity of the carrier. As to the issue on the 500 per package limitation, the petitioner in this case averred that its liability should not exceed $500 per package as provided in Section 4, Paragraph 5 of the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act. The court ruled that under Articles 1749, 1749 of the Civil Code, the provision allows the limitations of liability in that it provides that a stipulation that the common carrier's liability is limited to the value of the goods appearing in the bill of lading unless the shipper or owner declares a greater value. is binding. It is to be noted that the civil code does not itself limit the liability of the common carrier to a fixed amount per package, although the code expressly permits a stipulation limiting such liability. Thus, the COGSA, or Carriage of Goods by Sea Act, which is supplementary to the civil code, steps in and supplements the code by establishing a statutory provision limiting the carrier's liability in the absence of a declaration of a higher value of the goods by the shipper in the bill of lading. The provisions of the COGSA on limited liability are as much a part of the bill of lading as though physically in it, and as much a part thereof as though placed therein by the agreement of the parties. In these cases, therefore, there is no stipulation in the respective bills of lading limiting the carrier's liability for the loss or destruction of the goods, nor is there a declaration of a higher value of the goods. Hence, petitioner's carrier's liability should not exceed $500 per package, or its peso equivalent, at the time of the payment of the value of the goods lost, but in no case more than the amount of damage actually sustained. In this case, the liability was computed as 128 cartons, which the shipping unit times $500 each equals to $64,000. The cartons and not the container should be considered as the shipping unit. According to the dissent of Justice Yap, there is no evidence in this case that the containers were carrier supplied. The shipper must have been saved on freight charges by using containers for shipment. The container should be considered as the shipping unit. That's the dissent of Justice Yap. The second exempting circumstance is the act of public enemy. So you have to read 1734 number 2, and of course the limitation of the act of public enemy as an exempting circumstance under Article 1739 as to the act of public enemy. And remember, as you will learn in other Article 1734 and 1739, this defense, act of public enemy, is not absolute. Under 1739, in order for the common carrier to be exempted from liability, the act of the public enemy must have been the proximate and only cause, and the common carrier must have exercised due diligence to prevent or minimize the loss before, during, and after the act of the public enemy causing the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods. Another exempting circumstance is 1734 number 3, which is the act or omission of the shipper. And in this case, under 1734 number 3, the act or omission of the shipper or owner of the goods, there is a limitation under Article 1741. If the shipper or owner merely contributed to the loss, the destruction or deterioration of the goods, the proximate cause thereof being the negligence of the common carrier, then the common carrier shall be liable in damages which, however, shall be reduced by reason of equity. So the act or omission of the shipper must be the proximate cause of the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods. If the shipper merely contributed to the loss, and the proximate cause is still the negligence of the common carrier shall still be liable for damages, although the damages shall be reduced by reason of equity. Under another exempting circumstance, or another defense, would be letter D, character of goods. That's number 4 of 1734 of the Civil Code. Number 4, paragraph 4 of 1734 provides that the character of the goods or defects in the packaging or in the containers. And is further qualified in Article 1742, which provides that even if the loss or destruction or deterioration of the goods should be caused by the character of the goods or the faulty nature of the packing or the containers, the common carrier must exercise due diligence to forestall or lessen the loss. The Code of Commerce under 366 also made a qualification that within the 24 hours following the receipt of the merchandise, a claim may be brought against the carrier on account of damage or average found therein in opening the packages, provided that the signs of the damage or average giving rise to the claim may not be known from the exterior part of the packages, and in case that they may be so ascertained, said claim shall only be limited at the time of the receipt of the packages. Under the Code of Commerce, Article 366, after the periods mentioned have elapsed or after the transportation charges have been paid, no claim whatsoever shall be admitted against the carrier with regard to the condition in which the goods transported were delivered. So claims for damages must be made at the time the goods are delivered, unless the indications of the damage cannot be ascertained from the exterior of the package, in which case such written claims must be made within 24 hours from delivery. The rule is that as long as the damage to the goods was due purely to the inherent nature or defect of the goods or of the containers thereof, the common carrier cannot be held responsible. However, under Article 1742, the common carrier must exercise due diligence to forestall or lessen the loss for it to completely escape liability. In the case of Government versus Inchausti, 40 Philippines 2190, Philippines 219, the issue there is whether or not the terms and conditions of the bill of lading were binding upon the plaintiff, and the answer is yes. According to the court, the defendant placed said stamp upon the bill of lading before the plaintiff shipped the tiles, and that having shipped the tiles under said bill, with the terms and conditions of carriage stamped thereon, the government must be deemed to have assented to said terms and conditions. The binding effect of the conditions stamped on the bill of lading did not proceed from the collector of customs, but from the actual contract which the parties made. Each bill of lading is a contract, and the parties thereto are bound by its terms. The defendant, to free itself from liability, was only obliged to prove that the damages suffered by the tile were by virtue of the nature or defect of the article. The plaintiff, to hold the defendant liable, was obliged to prove that the damage to the tiles, by virtue of their nature, occurred on account of the defendant's negligence, or because the latter did not take precaution usually adopted by careful persons. The defendant in this case, according to the court, proved that the plaintiff did not attempt to dispute that the tiles were of a brittle and fragile nature, and that they were delivered to the defendant without any packing or protective covering. The plaintiff, not having proven negligence on the part of the defendant, is not entitled to recover damages. In another case of Southern Airlines versus Court of Appeals, 04-256, the question is whether or not petitioner Southern Airlines is liable for the loss or shortage, and the answer is yes. The court said that under Article 361 of the Code of Commerce, the carrier, in order to free itself from liability, was only obliged to prove that the damage suffered by the goods were by virtue of defects of the articles. Under Article 362 of the same code, the plaintiff, in order to hold the carrier liable, was obliged to prove that the damage to the goods by virtue of their nature occurred on account of the carrier's negligence, or because the carrier did not take the precaution adopted by careful persons. Petitioner claims exemption based on the fact that the sacks were in bad condition and that the rice was improperly packaged, causing a lot of spillage of the rice while it was being loaded. Southern Lines' contention is that it is Southern Lines' contention has no basis, because in this case, if the fact of improper packing is known to the carrier or its servants or apparent upon ordinary investigation observation, then when it accepts the goods notwithstanding such condition, it is not relieved of liability for loss or injury resulting therefrom. Furthermore, the petitioner itself frankly admitted, according to the court, that the strings tying the bags of rice were broken, that some bags were with holes, and plenty of rice were spilled inside the hull of the vessel, and that the boat personnel collected 26 sacks of rice, which they distributed among themselves. This shows that the shortage resulted from the negligence of the petitioner. Since this is an action for refund of the amount paid in excess of delivery and is not for damages, therefore the 24-hour rule under Article 366 does not apply. So remember that is an action for refund of the amount paid in excess of delivery, and that is not an action for damages. So the 24-hour rule in the Code of Commerce, Article 366, does not apply. Another exempting circumstance is letter E, the order of competent authority. Common carriers are responsible for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of goods under 1734, unless the same is due to the any of the following causes. And number 5 is order of or act of competent public authority. And this is modified under Article 1743, that if through order of public authority the goods are destroyed, seized, or destroyed, the common carrier is not responsible, provided said public authority had power to issue the order. So under 1743, the common carrier is not responsible for the loss of the goods if the public authority had power to issue the order. Where the officer acts without legal process, then the common carrier will be held liable. So again, under 1743, the common carrier is not responsible for the loss of the goods if the public authority had power to issue the order. Where the officer acts without legal process, the common carrier will be held liable. And in this case, there's a case of Ganson versus Court of Appeals. And it was held by the Supreme Court that Ganson contended that the scrap iron had not been unconditionally placed under his custody and control to make him liable. However, he admitted that he received the scraps of iron which Tumambing delivered to him. By the said act of delivery, the scraps were unconditionally placed in the possession and control of the common carrier, and upon the receipt by the carrier for transportation, the contract of carriage was deemed perfected. The carrier's extraordinary responsibility for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods commenced at that time. And under Article 1736, such extraordinary responsibility would cease only upon the delivery, actual or constructive, by the carrier to the consignee or to the person who has the right to receive them. The fact that part of the shipment had not been loaded on board the lighter did not impair the said contract of transportation, as the goods remained in the custody and control of the carrier, although it was still being unloaded. In this case, Ganson failed to show that the loss was due to any causes under Article 1734. We cannot sustain the theory of caso fortuito. The carrier raised the defense that the loss was due to an order or an act of competent public authority. The carrier, however, failed to show that the acting mayor had the power to issue the disputed order, or that it was lawful or issued under legal process of authority. The order was part of the pressure by the mayor to shake down Tumambing for 5,000 pesos. The order did not constitute valid authority for Ganzon to carry out. In any case, the intervention of the municipal officials was not of a character that would render impossible the fulfillment of by the carrier of its obligation. The petitioner was not duty-bound to obey the illegal order to dump into the sea the scrap iron. There is absence of sufficient proof that the issuance of the order was attended with such force or intimidation as to completely overpower the will of the carrier's employees. In her dissenting opinion, Justice Melencio Herrera said that through the order or act of competent public authority, the performance of the contract was rendered impossible. The captain has no control over the situation, just as Tumambing had no control over the situation. So what is the duration of extraordinary responsibility? The duration of extraordinary responsibility is listed in Article 1736, 1737, and 1738. And Art 1736 provides, the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier lasts from the time the goods are unconditionally placed in the possession of and received by the carrier for transportation until the same are delivered actually or constructively by the carrier to the consignee or to the person who has the right to receive them without prejudice to the provisions of Article 1738. Remember, 1738 provides that the extraordinary liability of the common carrier continues to be operative even during the time the goods are stored in a warehouse of the carrier at the place of destination until the consignee has been advised of the arrival of the goods and has reasonable opportunity thereafter to remove them or otherwise dispose of them. 1737 provides that common carrier's duty to observe extraordinary diligence in the vigilance over the goods remains in full force and effect even when they are temporarily unloaded or stored in transit, unless the shipper or owner has made use of that right of stoppage in transito. Under Article 1738 we have just read, the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier begins from the time the goods are delivered to the carrier. The delivery to the common carrier must place the goods to be transported unconditionally in the possession of the common carrier, and the common carrier must receive them. Otherwise, the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier will not commence. Under Article 1738, the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier is terminated at the time the goods are delivered to the consignee or the person who has the right to receive them, actual or constructive. There is contractual delivery. Remember, we noticed by the common carrier that the cargo had already arrived, placed them at the disposal of the shipper or consignee, releases the common carrier from extraordinary responsibility, and that's constructive delivery, mere notice. From such moment or notice, that's constructive delivery, the consignee or shipper should exercise over the cargo the ordinary control pertinent to ownership, should unload cargo from the common carrier. The shipper is bound to observe all diligence in obtaining necessary delivery of the goods. Once the goods are delivered, the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier ceases. The shipper is liable for lost earnings occasioned by the unnecessary delay in the use of the vehicles belonging to the carrier, due in turn to the failure of the former upon receipt of notice to the arrival of the goods, notice of the arrival of the goods at the place of destination, to unload forthwith and take away the cargo from the vehicles. This is a charge for demurrage. That means additional service provided by common carriers. Under 1737, the temporary unloading or storage of the goods during the time that they are being transported does not interrupt the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier. And there's only an exception, where the shipper or owner exercises its right of stoppage in transito. A stoppage in transito is the act by which the unpaid vendor of goods stops their progress and resumes possession of them while they are in the course of transit from him to the purchaser and not yet actually delivered to the latter or the buyer. This is exercised when the buyer becomes insolvent. The extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier ceases when the goods being transported are temporarily unloaded or stored in transit by reason of the exercise of the right of stoppage in transito by the unpaid seller. The common carrier holds the goods in the capacity of an ordinary bailee or warehouseman upon the theory that the exercise of the right of stoppage in transito terminates the contract of carriage. Hence, only ordinary diligence is required. Under 1738, the extraordinary responsibility of the common carrier does not cease, notwithstanding the fact that the goods being transported are stored in the warehouse of the common carrier at the place of destination. Extraordinary responsibility ceases only after the consignee has been advised of the arrival of the goods and has had reasonable opportunity to remove them or otherwise dispose of them. Liability as a warehouseman or ordinary diligence arises when the consignee has been advised of the arrival of the goods and has had reasonable opportunity to remove them from otherwise or otherwise dispose of them. Case in point is Sia Maritima versus Insurance Company, Sia Maritima versus Insurance Company of North America, 12-213. In this case, it was held that there was a complete contract of carriage, the consumption of which has already begun when the consummation of which has already begun when the shipper delivered the cargo to the carrier, and the latter took possession of the same by placing it on a lighter name manned by its employees, under which MacLeod became entitled to the privilege secured to him by law for its safe transportation and delivery, and the carrier to the full payment of its freight upon completion of the voyage. The barges or lighters were merely employed as the first step of the voyage, which is part of the contract. The receipt of the goods by the carrier has been said to lie at the foundation of the contract to carry and deliver, and if no goods are received, there can be no such contract. The liability and responsibility, according to the court, of the carrier under the contract for the carriage of goods commence on their actual delivery to or receipt by the carrier or an authorized agent of the goods. The test as to control and possession of the goods been completely surrendered. The test as to whether the relation of shipper and carrier has been established is, had the control and possession of the goods been completely surrendered by the shipper to the common carrier? Whenever the control and possession of the goods passes to the carrier and nothing remains to be done by the shipper, then it can be said with certainty that the relationship of shipper and carrier has been established. The bill of lading is not indispensable to a contract of carriage. It is merely a documentary proof of an agreement of the parties. There was no force majeure in this case, according to the court. The reason for the damage of the loss was lack of adequate protections and measures taken by the carrier to prevent the loss. Another case is Ludo versus Binamira. It was held in this case in Ludo versus Binamira, 101 Philippines 120, that the general rule is that the common carrier's responsibility to observe extraordinary diligence lasts from the time the goods are placed in the possession of the carrier until they are delivered to the consignee. But this rule applies only when the loss, destruction, and deterioration of the goods takes place while the goods are in the possession of the carrier and not after it has lost control of them. While the goods are in possession, it is but fair that it exercised extraordinary diligence in protecting them from damage, and if loss occurs, the law presumes that it was due to its fault or negligence. While delivery to the customs authorities is not delivery to the consignee, the parties may, however, agree to limit the liability of the carrier, considering that the goods have still to go through the inspection of the customs authorities before they are actually turned over to the consignee. This stipulation is not contrary to morals or public policy. This is a situation where the common carrier has lost its control of the goods because of custom regulations it is unfair that it be made responsible for any loss or damage during such interregnum. In another case, APL versus Clipper, in APL versus Clipper, the Supreme Court had occasion to rule that APL does not question the finding that the damage was due to its negligence, but contends that its liability cannot exceed $500 based on the bill of lading and section 454, paragraph 5 of the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act. Regardless of its negligence, the carrier's liability would attach because, being a common carrier, its responsibility is extraordinary and lasts from time the goods are placed in its possession until they are delivered, actually or constructively, to the consignee or to the person who has the right to receive them. The carrier should only pay $500. The shipper who accepted the bill of lading is bound by its terms. The Carriage of Goods by Sea Act is merely supplementary to the provisions of the Civil Code which govern the contract. How about the agreement limiting liability? So agreements limiting liability. So are these agreements valid or invalid? And the provisions we are talking about with respect to agreements limiting liability as to the required or degree of diligence required, it is stated in Articles 17, 44, 45, 51, and that's 44, 45, and 51. So remember that under 1744, a stipulation between the common carrier and the shipper or owner limiting the liability of the former for the loss or destruction or deterioration of the goods to a degree less than the extra diligence shall be valid, provided it be is in writing, signed by the shipper or owner, supported by available consideration other than the service rendered by the common carrier, and 3, reasonable, just, and not contrary to public policy. So those are the requirements required, necessary if there's a stipulation between the parties as to the limits of liability, especially with respect to the diligence required. Under 1745, it provides that any of the following or similar stipulations shall be considered unreasonable, unjust, and contrary to public policy. So there are 7 of them. Goods are transported at the risk of the owner. Common carrier will not be liable for any loss. Carrier need not observe any diligence at all. Common carrier shall exercise the honor of a good family only, or a man of ordinary prudence. Or number 5, common carrier shall not be responsible for the acts or omissions of his employees. And number 6, with respect to these are stipulations that are contrary to public policy. Number 6, that the common carrier's liability for acts committed by thieves or robbers who do not act with grave or reasonable threat, violence, or intimidation is dispensed with or undiminished. And number 7, the common carrier is not responsible for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of goods on account of the defective condition of the car, vehicle, ship, airplane, or other equipment used in the contract of carriage. Under Article 1751 of the Civil Code, the fact that the common carrier has no competitor along the line or route or part thereof to which the contract refers shall be taken into consideration of the question of whether or not a stipulation limiting the common carrier's liability is reasonable, just, and in accordance with public policy. How about stipulations with respect to limiting the amount of liability? Is it valid or is it invalid? Under Article 1749, a stipulation that the common carrier's liability is limited to the value of the goods appearing in the bill of lading unless the shipper or owner declares a greater value is binding. So it's binding. And under Article 1750, a contract fixing the sum that may be recovered by the owner or shipper for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods is valid if it is reasonable and just under the circumstances and has been fairly and freely agreed upon. In the case of Ismael versus Barreto, Ismael versus Barreto, 31 Philippines 90, Philippines 90, it was observed that the evidence shows that 164 cases were shipped valued at 2,500 a case. The limit of defendant's liability for each case for loss or damage from any cause or for any reason would put it in the power of the defendant to take the whole cargo of 164 cases at a value of 300 per case, or less than 1/8 of its actual value. If that rule should be sustained, no silk would ever be shipped. Such limitation of value is unconscionable and void as against public policy. In the case of Ismael versus Barreto, in the same case, it was stated that the validity of stipulations limiting the carrier's liability is to be determined by their reasonableness and their conformity to the sound public policy. It cannot lawfully stipulate for exemption from liability unless such exemption is just and reasonable, and unless the contract is freely and fairly made. Remember, freely and fairly made. No contractual limitation is reasonable which is subversive of public policy. A common carrier cannot limit its liability for injury or loss where such is caused by its own negligence, unskillfulness, or carelessness of its employees. The rule rests on public policy. The shipper and common carrier are not on equal terms. The shipper is entirely at the mercy of the common carrier unless protected by law. Such contracts are one thing in the element of voluntary assent. The action in this case, in the case of Ismael versus Barreto, was brought within the reasonable time, considering that the distance between Surigao and Manila and the fact that the plaintiff had to make a full investigation to determine liability. Stipulations limiting the time for bringing suit must be reasonable, otherwise he can be declared void. In another case, Hickok versus McCondry. In Hickok versus McCondry, 42 Philippines 205, it was observed that there are three kinds of stipulations that have often been made in a bill of lading. First, one exempting the carrier from any and all liability for loss or damage occasioned by its own negligence. Second, one providing for an unqualified limitation of such liability to an agreed valuation. And third, one limiting the liability of the carrier to an agreed valuation unless the shipper declares a higher value and pays a higher rate of freight. The first and second stipulations are invalid as contrary to public policy. The third is valid and enforceable. A stipulation in the bill of lading limiting the liability of the common carrier to a specified amount unless the shipper declares a higher value and pays a higher freight is valid and it is enforceable. If a common carrier gives to a shipper the choice of two rates, the lower of them conditioned upon is agreeing to a stipulated valuation of the property in case of loss even by the carrier's negligence. If the shipper makes the choice understandingly and freely and names his valuation, he cannot thereafter recover more than the value which he has thus placed upon the property. There's another case of Shawaram versus Pal, Mr. Shawaram, 17/606. There are two requisites according to the court in this case must be fulfilled in order that the liability of Pal be limited according to the stipulations behind the ticket stub. The contract is just and reasonable under the circumstances, and two, it has been fairly and freely agreed upon. The fact that the conditions are printed at the back of the ticket stub in letters so small that they are hard to read would not warrant the presumption that the plaintiff was aware of those conditions, such that he had fairly and freely agreed to those conditions. Pal has admitted that passengers do not sign the ticket. Also, the carrier cannot limit its liability for injury, loss, or goods shipped when such injury or loss was caused by its own negligence. Another case is Ong Yu versus CA. Ong Yu versus CA reported 91 SCRA 233. In that case, PAL incurred delay in the delivery of the petitioner's luggage. However, there was no bad faith. The liability of PAL was limited only to the stipulations printed on the back of the ticket. While the passenger in this case had not signed the plane ticket, he is nevertheless bound by the provisions thereof. Such provisions, according to the court, have been held to be part of the contract of carriage and binding, valid and binding, upon the passenger, regardless of the latter's lack of knowledge or assent to the regulation. It is what is known as the contract of adhesion, wherein one party imposes a ready-made form of contract onto the other. It is not entirely prohibited. The one who adheres to the contract is in reality free to reject it entirely. If he adheres, he gives his consent. A contract limiting liability upon an agreed violation does not offend against the policy of the law forbidding one from contracting against his own negligence. Considering that the petitioner had failed to declare a higher value for his baggage, he cannot be permitted to recover in excess of 100 pesos. Besides, passengers are advised not to place valuable items inside their baggage. Also, there is nothing in the evidence to show that the actual place of the goods allegedly lost by petitioner. Another case of Pan Am versus IAC, 164 SCRA 268. It was held that in this case Pan Am cited Ong versus CA because this case is clearly applicable, and the ruling in Shiwaram versus PAL is inapplicable since it was premised on the fact that the conditions printed at the back of the ticket were so small and hard to read. In this case, limited is limited to $600 and stipulated at the back of the ticket. The Supreme Court ruled that reversed the CA ruling awarding petitioner damages for lost profits. According to the court, the rule laid down in Mendoza versus PAL provides that before damages can be awarded for loss of profits on account of delay or failure of delivery, it must have been appeared that the common carrier had notice at the time of delivery to him of the particular circumstances attending the shipment, and in which probably would lead to such special loss if he defaulted. In the absence of a showing that Pan Am's attention was called to the special circumstances requiring prompt delivery of the luggage, it cannot be held liable for the cancellation of respondent's contract, as it could not have been foreseen such an eventuality when it accepted the luggage for transit. In another case, Pan Am versus Rapada, 209 SCRA 67, it was held that the issue is whether or not a passenger is bound by the terms of a passenger ticket, declaring that the limitation of liability set forth in the Warsaw Convention as amended by the Hague Protocol shall apply in case of loss, damage or destruction to a registered luggage of a passenger. The answer is yes. Pan Am was ordered to pay $400 and for $10,000 in attorney's fees and cost of suit. The court had occasion to state that there is no dispute that there was a notice appearing on page 2 of the ticket stating that the Warsaw Convention governs in case of death or injury to a passenger or of loss, damage or destruction to a passenger's luggage. According to the court, such notice should be sufficient notice showing the applicability of the Warsaw Convention limitations. The passenger, upon contracting with the airline and receiving the plane ticket, was expected to be vigilant, according to the court, insofar as this luggage is concerned. If the passenger fails to adduce evidence to overcome the stipulation, he cannot avoid the application of the liability limitations. The Warsaw Convention, according to the court as amended, specifically provides that it is applicable to international carriage, which it defines as any carriage in which, according to the agreement between the parties, the place of departure and the place of destination are situated either within the territories of two high contracting parties or within the territory of a single high contracting party, if there is an agreed stopping place within the territory of another state. Nowhere in the Warsaw Convention is such detailed notice of baggage liability limitations required. According to the court, it is, however, a common, safe, and practical custom for air carriers to indicate beforehand the precise sums equivalent to those fixed by Articles 22, Paragraph 2 of the Convention. In this case, the facts show that Rapadas actually refused to register his attaché case. In attempting to avoid registering the luggage, manifested a disregard of airline rules on allowable hand-carried baggages. Prudence dictates that cash and jewelry should be removed from the check-in luggage and placed in one's pockets or hand-carried. The alleged lacked enough time for him to make a declaration of a higher value and to pay the corresponding supplementary charges cannot justify his failure to comply with the requirements that will exclude the application of limited liability. Had he really complied with the airline regulations from the start, this situation would not have arisen, according to the court. The court continued that while contracts of adhesion are not entirely prohibited, neither is a blind reliance on them encouraged. In the face of facts showing they should be ignored because of their basically one-sided nature, the court does not hesitate to rule out blind adherence to their terms. The Supreme Court is not saying that the passengers are always bound to the stipulated amounts printed in a ticket, found in a contract of adhesion, or printed elsewhere but referred to in handouts or forms. The court simply recognizes that the reasons behind stipulations on liability limitations arise from the difficulty, if not impossibility, of establishing with a clear preponderance of evidence the contents of a lost suitcase. Unless the contents are declared, it will always be the word of a passenger against death of the airline. If the loss of life or property is caused by the gross negligence of the airline, or the contents of the lost luggage are proved by satisfactory evidence other than the self-serving declarations of one party, then the court will not hesitate to disregard the fine print in a contract of adhesion. Otherwise, according to the court, it is constrained to rule that they have to enforce the contract as it is the only reasonable basis to arrive at a just award. And there are other factors that would affect an agreement limiting liability, and these are those factors in Article 17, 46, 47, 48, 51, and 52 of the Civil Code. And these factors are, again, in 1746, the agreement limiting the common carrier's liability may be annulled by the shipper or owner of the common if the common carrier refused to carry the goods unless the former agreed to such stipulation. In 1747, if the common carrier without just cause delays the transportation of the goods or changes the stipulated or usual route, the contract limiting the common carrier's liability cannot be availed of in case of loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods. Under Article 1748, an agreement limiting the common carrier's liability or delay on account of strike of riots is valid. The fact that under 1751, the fact that the common carrier has no competitor along the line or route or a part thereof to which the contract refers shall be taken into consideration on the question of whether or not a stipulation limiting the common carrier's liability is reasonable, just, and in consonance with public policy. And under 1752, even when there is an agreement limiting the liability of the common carrier in the vigilance over the goods, the common carrier is disputably presumed to have been negligent in cases of their loss, destruction, or deterioration. There are different kinds of stipulations limiting liability. The following stipulations are often made in a bill of lading And these are stipulation exempting the carrier from any and all liability for loss or damage occasioned by his own negligence, and that is void. Another kind of stipulation limiting liability is stipulation providing for an unqualified limitation of such liability to an agreed stipulation, and that is also void. A third kind of stipulation limiting liability is a stipulation limiting the liability of the common carrier to an agreed valuation unless the shipper declares a higher value and pays a higher rate of freight. This is valid and enforceable type of stipulation limiting liability. When is a stipulation limiting liability valid? Under Article 1744, the shipper or owner and the common carrier may stipulate to limit the liability of the common carrier for the loss, destruction, or deterioration of goods to a degree less than an extraordinary diligence, provided the number one, the stipulation must be in writing and signed by both parties. Number two, the stipulation must be supported by valuable consideration other than the service rendered by the common carrier. And number three, the stipulation must be reasonable, just, and not contrary to public policy. This applies when the common carrier is acting as such, but not when it acts as a private carrier, as in the case of Home Insurance versus American Steamship Company, where the Supreme Court held that the civil code provisions on common carrier should not be applied where the common carrier is not acting as such, but as a private carrier. Such policy has no force where the public at large is not involved. So remember that the parties may stipulate that the diligence to be exercised by the common carrier may be less than extraordinary diligence, provided that the requirements under the Article 1744 are complied with. However, the parties cannot reduce the diligence to less than that of a good father of a family. Under Article 1745, provides for 7 stipulations which shall be considered unreasonable, unjust, and contrary to public policy. So remember those 7 stipulations in 1745. These are considered unreasonable, unjust, and contrary to public policy. An exemption, in general words, not expressly relating to negligence, even though the words are wide enough to include loss by negligence or default of common carrier servants, must be construed as limiting the liability of the common carrier as insurer, and not as relieving him from the duty of exercising reasonable skill and care. Under 1751 of the Civil Code, the lack of competition of the common carrier shall be considered in determining whether or not a stipulation limiting a common carrier's liability is reasonable, just, and in consonance with public policy. Examples of valid stipulation that are in 1748, agreement limiting the liability for delay on account of strikes or riots. 1749, Hickok versus McCondry, the stipulation that the common carrier's liability is limited to the value of the goods appearing in the bill of lading unless the shipper or owner declares a greater value. And number three, 1750, a contract fixing the sum that may be recovered by the owner or shipper of loss, destruction, or deterioration of the goods if it is reasonable and just under the circumstances and has been fairly and freely agreed upon by the parties. So those are the three, 1748, 49, and 1750. 1749, illustrated by Hickok versus McCondry case. Under Article 1746, an agreement limiting the common carrier's liability may be annulled by the shipper or owner if the common carrier refused to carry the goods unless the former agreed to such stipulation. The effect of the shipper's consent obtained by means of refusal on the part of the carrier to carry the goods is to make the agreement limiting the common carrier's liability voidable at the instance of the shipper. The principles here is those stated in St. Paul's Insurance versus McCondry, 70 Scra 122, St. Paul Insurance versus McCondry. The principles here is that, number one, a stipulation in the bill of lading limiting the common carrier's liability to the value of the goods appearing in the bill unless the shipper or owner declares a greater value is valid and binding. Number two, the insurer who pays the insurance on his claim for damage is merely subrogated to the rights of the insured. Therefore, said insurer cannot collect from the common carrier more than what the insured can collect from the common carrier. Number three, the obligation to pay the damage begins from the date it fails to deliver the shipment in good condition to the consignee on the basis of the rate of exchange on that date. So those are the three principles with respect to stipulations in the bill of lading limiting the common carrier's liability. And these are the principles enunciated in the case of St. Paul Insurance versus McCondry, 70 Scra 122. Remember the effect of delay in the transportation. Under 1747, the common carrier cannot avail of the contract limiting this liability in these cases. Where the common carrier delays the transportation of the goods, where the common carrier changes the stipulated or usual route, in both cases, the delay or change of route must be without just cause. So that's under 1747. Under 1752, the presumption continues even when there is an agreement limiting the liability of the common carrier in the vigilance of the goods. This presumption is disputable or rebuttable by evidence that the common carrier exercised extraordinary diligence. Next, we go to the applicable law in foreign trade. Let's look at Article 1753 of the Civil Code. The law of the country to which the goods are to be transported shall govern the liability of the common carrier for their loss, destruction, or deterioration. The Civil Code governs the liability of the common carrier in case of loss, damage, or deterioration. Under 1766, in all matters not regulated by the Civil Code, the rights and obligations of the common carrier shall be governed by the Code of Commerce and by special laws which are supplementary to the provisions of the Civil Code. And what are the rules on passenger baggage? So this is quite long. And the rules on passenger baggage, you should look at Articles 1754, Articles 1998, Article 2000, 2000, Article 2001, Article 2002, Article 2003. Okay, so again, the rules on passenger baggage are listed in Articles 1754. 1998, Articles 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. Remember, there are classes of baggage of passengers. The law makes a distinction between baggage in the custody of the passengers or their employees, or, and number two, the baggage not in such custody but in that of the common carrier. So, classes of baggage of passengers. Distinction. Number one, baggage in the custody of the passenger or their employees. And number two, baggage in the custody of the common carrier. Article 1754 refers to Articles 1998, 2000, up to 2003 of the Civil Code concerning the responsibility of hotel keepers. Under 1998, the baggage of passengers in their personal custody or in that of their employees while being transported shall be regarded as necessary deposits. The common carrier shall be responsible for such baggage as depositaries, provided that, number one, notice was given to them or to their employees of the baggage brought by the passengers, and that, number two, the passengers take the precaution which said common carriers advised relative to the care and vigilance of their baggage. How about the responsibility for acts of employees or thieves? Under Article 2000, a common carrier is responsible as a depositary for the loss of or injury to the baggage in the personal custody of passengers caused by the common carrier's servants or employees, but not those caused by force majeure. Under Article 2001, the act of thief or robber who has entered the common carrier's vehicle is not deemed force majeure unless it is done with the use of arms or through irresistible force. And under Article 2002, the common carrier is not liable if the loss of the baggage in the personal custody of the passenger is due to the acts of the passengers, his family, servants, or visitors, or if the loss arises from the character of the baggage. With respect to stipulations limiting liability under Article 2003, a common carrier cannot free himself from responsibility by posting notices to the effect that he is not liable for the baggage brought by the passengers. Any stipulation diminishing the responsibility required under Articles 1998 to 2001 shall be void. So very important. A common carrier cannot free himself from responsibility by posting notices to the effect that he is not liable for the baggage brought by the passengers. How about liability for baggage not in custody of passengers? This refers to baggage delivered to the custody of the common carrier and received by him to be carried in the same manner as other goods being transported by him, just like check-in baggage. As the common carrier has custody of such baggage and are carried like any other goods, the provisions on carriage of goods shall apply. Extraordinary diligence in the vigilance over the goods. The moment the effects of the passenger are unconditionally placed in the possession of and received by a carrier for conveyance, the law immediately imposes on the common carrier extraordinary responsibility for the loss thereof, which lasts until the actual or constructive delivery of the effects to the passenger as the person who has the right to receive them. The presumption of negligence in this case exists but may be rebutted by the proof of exercise of extraordinary diligence or causes under Article 1734. Remember, as a common carrier is liable for the loss of baggage, although not declared, and the charges not paid, if it accepted them for transportation. Again, a common carrier is liable for the loss of baggage, although it's not declared, and the charges not paid, if it's accepted for transportation. So that goes our lecture on common carriers, the liability and presumption of negligence of common carriers. And our next lecture will be about common carrier of passengers or common carriage of passengers, the nature and extent of responsibility. So watch out for the next lecture on common carriage of passengers. Thank you.